Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. So we've talked about the fallout from France's latest attempt at imposing a carbon tax and obviously the deeper economic discontent that's driving the protests there in France right now. So what would you think, though, about the fact that at this moment there's a carbon tax on the table in the United States Congress? Does that surprise you? Well, the recently introduced Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act is the first bipartisan climate bill in Congress for a decade. To be frank, it probably has a close to zero chance of going anywhere right now, but it could set a framework for how the next Congress approaches climate legislation. And we want to hear from you. Would you support a carbon tax? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Call us with your thoughts on this. Now, in a moment, we're going to hear from Democratic Representative Charlie Crist, one of the bill's co-sponsors. But joining us first from Seattle, Washington, is Kate Yoder. She's news editor for Grist, an online environmental journalism magazine, and we have a link to her reporting at onpointradio.org. Kate, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So first of all, tell us a little bit more about the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. What does it propose to do?
Yeah, so the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act would put a $15 per metric ton fee on carbon dioxide, and that'd be put on fossil fuels, and then that would rise $10 per year. So it would actually scale up fairly fast, and that the net revenue from that would be given back to households in America in the form of a check as a rebate.
Ah, so okay, so we as individual Americans and taxpayers would be the beneficiary of this carbon tax.
Yeah, that's the idea. I mean, it could also, you know, rise gas prices at the pump, but the idea is that that money would be given back.
Okay, so but you've written how you basically see this bill as in this Congress, which we only have, a couple weeks left in, is DOA. Now, why?
Yeah, I mean, I think next year it's going to be the same case because the Republican controlled Senate really isn't going to be receptive to a carbon tax. And, you know, President Trump obviously wouldn't go for this either.
Okay, so not much, not lacking the key support to get it into an actual law, but nevertheless, is it not significant though that this is the first bipartisan climate bill to make it into a bill format in Congress in a decade?
Yeah, I mean that's a really big deal, and there are a lot of reasons to try to put something out there, a carbon tax legislation, even if it's not likely to pass. That could be, you know, a signal for bipartisan appetite for climate change, or it could be kind of putting out a template or a testing ground to kind of take control of the narrative of climate policy and try to kind of shape what climate policy looks like going forward. And it could also be kind of gauging public reaction.
Ah, okay. So a couple of key ways there, then, how it could help set the tone of a conversation for maybe more realistic legislation in the next Congress.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think most Republicans in Congress don't talk about climate change much, but, you know, many of those who did just lost their seats in the recent midterm elections. So I think this bill, one way you could interpret it is that it's a signal in a way that bipartisan action on climate change is still possible, even though the current administration is really hostile to it.
Okay. You know, we have been focusing on Republican resistance to the concept of a carbon tax. But you're there in Seattle, where just in this past midterm election, a carbon tax proposal in the state of Washington failed, despite having the support of, for example, Democratic Governor Jay Inslee there. What happened?
I think it's a pretty complicated picture. I think, obviously, people tend to be a little bit resistant to taxes. Polls show that a lot of people like them in the abstract, especially in Washington, but they're not always happy about implementing them in real life. So Initiative 1631, I've been following for basically all year. Mm-hmm. It came out of sort of a 10-year collaboration between environmentalists, as well as groups representing communities of color and labor groups. So it wasn't just something that was, dreamed up in, you know, an academic institution by an economist. It kind of came from a lot of the people who are being impacted by climate change.
Okay. But, go ahead. Because I was just going to say, so then why? I mean, it failed by more than 12 points, right? That was the gap.
Right. I mean, yeah, I think one thing is people are resistant to taxes. The other thing is that oil companies spent, you know, $31 million to kill the measure, which is the most that's ever been spent against an initiative in Washington state history. So, you know, there are a lot of factors at play there. And, you know, it's a complicated policy. I think putting that in front of people, they might not be able to kind of wrap their heads around the details and how it's really going to help them and help the world. So
$31 million was spent by the oil and gas industry to kill a carbon tax proposal in the state of Washington. But on the other hand, this is where it gets a little confusing for me, because on the other hand, I'm seeing that regarding this, the federal proposal that's in Congress right now, there's a quote here in the Miami Herald from Ted Halstead, who's the CEO of the Climate Leadership Council. That's a group comprised of oil companies and other businesses, saying that the introduction of the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act provides a clear proof of concept that a conservative-inspired carbon dividends framework can attract bipartisan support, because they're looking for the fact that he says it's no coincidence that the first bipartisan climate bill in nearly a decade is based on carbon dividends, a plan that returns revenues to the American people and appealing to all sides of the climate debate. So is the oil and gas industry, is there something they see in this bill that they like? Is it in exchange for, I don't know, fewer regulations or what?
Yeah, I mean, there have been some plans over the years that have been supported by, you know, Exxon and Shell and other fossil fuel companies. So this new proposal from Deutsch prevents new regulations on carbon dioxide if it was implemented for like a full 10 years. So the EPA wouldn't be able to make new rules limiting it. Other, you know, more conservative.
So can I just jump in here?
Sure.
That sounds like a pretty big deal. Like, say that the EPA cannot make any carbon regulations for 10 years if this bill passes.
Yeah. I mean, the idea is that it's going to have a big enough impact that wouldn't be necessary, but that's definitely a concession for conservatives or environmentalists.
Okay, because the bill says that it aims to reduce carbon pollution by 40% within those 10 years, which would outstrip even the goals, I believe, that the Obama administration had.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it has potential to be pretty effective.
Okay. Potential to be pretty effective in practice, but again, as we've been talking about, the political potential perhaps is lacking. I want to actually just get a couple of callers in here, if I can. We were speaking to Kate Yoder. She's news editor for Grist, an online environmental magazine or journalism organization. And we're talking about this new bipartisan climate proposal for a carbon tax, the first such bipartisan proposal in Congress for a decade. And would love to know what you think. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Let's go to Rebecca, who's calling from Bettendorf, Iowa. Rebecca, you're on the air.
Hi, Meg. This is Rebecca. Thanks for taking my call. My husband is active duty military, so we've been all over the world. And we've paid carbon taxes in other countries. I think that our country would benefit from this. Perhaps it would encourage people to use public transportation more. We're rural here. I wish we had a better public transportation system here. So if that carbon tax would then help fund better public transportation, that would be fantastic. Mm. I think your speaker's right that folks are resistant to change. I think back to the recycling issue. We could do a much better job with recycling, but we're doing better than we were 15 years ago. So I think that this carbon tax kind of falls into that same category.
Yeah. Well, Rebecca, thank you so much for your call. Let's get a different view here. Roald is calling from La Crosse, Wisconsin. Roald, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to emphasize, I guess, the education piece and that people, once understanding this, would, I think, support it. I think one key part might be just the simple equation that if I drive, say, 10,000 miles a year, what might I be expecting to spend extra on this fee? And then also, what might my rebate be? being that I would be, say, a normal user versus a airline or a much larger user.
Yeah. Well, Roald, thank you so much for your call. Let's get an answer to that question from the co-sponsor of the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. Representative Charlie Crist joins us now. He's a Democratic congressman from Florida's 13th congressional district. He's with us from Washington. Congressman Crist, welcome to On Point.
Thank you, Meghna. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
It's good to have you. So you just heard Roald there asking what I think fundamentally is a question of, is it possible that if, and I know we've been talking about why it's a big if your proposal gets anywhere in Congress, could it actually...
Let's hope so.
Yeah. I mean, but could it have the effect of ending up being a slightly increased burden on the people who are least able to afford it? Would it translate to higher prices at the pump, for example?
I really don't think so. Obviously the purpose is to address climate change. And I think most of us can agree that it's a real and present danger. It's a problem that we in Florida see up close and personal, if you will. One good example of that would be the recent Hurricane Michael that hit Florida's panhandle. It started out as a tropical storm, wasn't expected to intensify much beyond that. And then as it came north in the Gulf of Mexico toward the Florida Panhandle, it intensified rapidly, almost to a Category 5. So we see evidence of this, far too often. And then the recent wildfires in California as well. And so the idea is to put a fee on those who create the utilization of carbon dioxide to the point that it's warming the planet, causing this problem, contributing to the destruction. And it hurts us environmentally. It hurts us economically. It hurts us in so many ways. The obvious intent is to curtail that kind of activity and that continued contribution of carbon dioxide.
If I may just jump in here, though, is there anything in the bill? I'm thinking about sort of market-based solutions for environmental issues that have worked in the past, like cap and trade. When we were talking about we were really focused on trying to reduce the chemical inputs that lead to acid rain, for example. But the key thing about that is that there was a cap that the federal government kind of ratcheted down year after year. Is there any such thing in your proposal on this carbon tax? Because if not, then what difference does it make? I mean, because what is stopping companies from just passing on the cost of the tax to consumers and citizens?
Well, I think that you're looking at whether there's some kind of penalty that would exist. And I think the penalty here is that there is this fee, $15 for the initial year, then gets added to by $10 thereafter. As long as they are continuing to emit carbon. And the caller who asked the question becomes the beneficiary because those funds go through the Department of Treasury and are remitted to the citizens of America, like your caller, like other consumers around the country. So in essence, I would argue that those people, the consumers like you and me and your caller from Wisconsin, will end up benefiting and not being penalized. This is really aimed at having the polluter pay and having the consumer gain because through no fault of their own, these kinds of conditions are happening around the country.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point. Congressman Crist, let me ask you, a little earlier with Kate, who's still with us, and I'll come back to you in a second here, Kate. But Kate was talking about how there's resistance to the idea of a carbon tax from some members of the Republican Party. But I'm also seeing, Politico just recently had a story about how perhaps there's also a resistance among some Democrats, right? I mean, incoming Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has been calling for a Green New Deal, for example, where a carbon tax would only be a tiny part of that New Deal. And Senator Jeff Merkley of Oregon is saying that, hey, look, if a carbon tax can't pass in his neighboring state of Washington, it probably has no legs nationally. Are you concerned that there's maybe a reduced enthusiasm for a carbon tax amongst Democrats as well?
No, I really don't think so. what your comment about Representative-elect from New York Ocasio doesn't sound like she's objecting to it. It sounds rather like she'd like to add to it and expand the effort. And that's not a bad thing. And so, you know, and just because a particular state decided not to support it, we have bipartisan sponsors on this bill already. Initially, there were three Democrats, two Republicans. Now we have three Republicans. So I think that the obvious nature of what's happening with climate change throughout America and the world, for that matter, is that people are seeing it, and the evidence of it is undeniable. And I think less and less you'll see people saying or, you know, touting the view that, well, it really doesn't exist or I don't believe it. Because, you know, the weather indicators are so obvious and so clear that it's hard to refute. Just in Florida alone, I live in the Tampa Bay area, and so I represent a district that happens to be a peninsula, Pinellas County.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as you drive around, it's bordered on one side by Tampa Bay, the other side by the Gulf of Mexico, and I've lived there most of my life. But in the last 5 years, the rising sea level is apparent. It's obvious. You can see it with the naked eye and witness it. And another example down in Miami-Dade County, I think President Obama was down there a number of years ago and giving a talk about this issue and said, you know, here in Miami-Dade County, you know, you have situations where even when it's not raining, you're getting flooding. And
right.
That's because it's coming up.
Yeah.
And so the more Americans see this around the country, I think the more pressing and obvious this issue is, and the greater the importance and support will become. And in this case, it's on a bipartisan basis. Let's face it, Magna. You know, with three Republicans, three Democrats sponsoring this bill now in the House, you know, obviously this new Congress that comes in just a few weeks is going to be a bipartisan Congress, a Democratic House and a Republican Senate.
Well, Congressman Chris, what better time? And Congressman Chris, I'm afraid that, that speaking of time, we're out of time. But Representative Charlie Crist from Florida's 13th Congressional District and co-sponsor of the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Magna. Great to be with you.
And Kate Yoder, news editor for Grist, an online environmental news magazine. Kate, I'm sorry I ran out of time there with you, but thank you so much for walking us through this new proposal in Congress. Thank you. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.